Hi, listeners. This is a quick thank you for listening and for your ongoing support. If you're enjoying the program, please consider clicking the follow or subscribe button if you haven't done so already. It really helps us out. There's no better way to support us than doing that or sharing the show with a friend, colleague, family member, or any new or expecting parent in your life. It's totally appreciated. On with the show. Hi, I'm Sarah Trott, and welcome to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm a new mama, and this podcast is all about postpartum care for the first few months following birth, the time period also known as the fourth trimester. My postpartum doula, Esther Gallagher, is my co-host. She's a mother, grandmother, perinatal educator, birth and postpartum care provider. Fourth trimester care, our topic, is about the practical, emotional, and social support parents and baby require. And importantly, it helps set the tone for the continuing journey of parenting. Hi, this is Sarah Trott, and welcome back to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm joined today with a special guest, Sarah Moskoff. And before we get started and I give you an intro to Sarah, I just wanted to remind all of our listeners that you can go to our website, which is fourthtrimesterpodcast.com, and sign up for our newsletter. And you're also able to become a sponsor of our program. Thank you to all of our existing sponsors. You can sponsor us by going to patreon.com. So a bit about Sarah. We're just so pleased that you're here today with us. Sarah is the CEO and co-founder of Winnie, which, if you haven't downloaded that app yet as a new parent, we highly encourage you to go to the App Store and download it now. It's very cool. It's an app that helps parents get local information and find great places to go with their families. I was using it this morning, believe it or not, thinking about my spring break plans, so I personally can attest to its usefulness. Sarah has a background in consumer technology and product management. She's worked at Postmates, Twitter, YouTube, Google. She graduated with computer science and an engineering degree from MIT, and she lives with her almost two-year-old daughter, Bryn, and her husband, Eric, in San Francisco. So welcome, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are going to just kick off with hearing a bit more about your background. Is there anything there I left out?
That was a great overview. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So you have an almost two-year-old now, but I'm sure it might feel like it was a while ago, but can you tell us a bit about what your experience was like with your fourth trimester?
Yeah, it feels like a while ago and also like it was just yesterday. It's really bizarre. My fourth trimester was really difficult. I had a fairly easy pregnancy. I got really huge, but other than that, you know, I felt good. I worked through my pregnancy. And I kind of assumed like I'd just pop this baby out and go back to work and life as usual. But as anyone with a child knows, they really change everything. And sort of on top of it all, I had what I now recognize was postpartum depression. So my fourth trimester was a pretty dark time for me. I took a healthy baby home from the hospital, but due to some weird complication, she ended up back in the NICU. And while she was there, they actually let my husband and I stay at the hospital with her. So we got a room there for a few nights. And I was just exhausted. Like, I was constantly in there breastfeeding her. I didn't eat. I didn't sleep. I didn't shower. And so when I got back home with her a second time, you know, she ended up being fine and healthy, but I was not. I was just so depleted, which sort of doesn't help when you already have all these sort of hormonal changes going on. So it was a pretty rough time for me. I had a lot of suicidal thoughts. And it took me like about 5 or 6 weeks to really recognize I was in bad shape and needed to make some changes.
When did you start to feel that I'm not feeling myself feeling? Was it during your pregnancy, or can you even identify when that sort of started?
No, I felt great like during my pregnancy, besides the fact that I was like huge and couldn't walk. I mentally felt good. I was excited to have the baby. I was ready. I felt completely prepared. But after I had her, it was pretty immediate. I just was like, what have I done? I'm completely unfit for this job. I've made a huge mistake. I really loved her, but I just felt like I had done something I couldn't get myself out of. And that's when I started feeling like the only way out was to kill myself.
Wow.
Well, I'm just going to interject, Sarah, that feeling of what have I done and being faced with the enormity of a new baby is really common. Many people hit that. I think it's really normal to hit that. And then, so long as they're being well supported in their trajectory, they just recognize, okay, of course, it is a big thing to have a new baby in your arms and all of that responsibility. But when you add the strain and, malnutrition and sleeplessness on top of that, you know, that was a setup. I mean, I hate to say so, but clearly anybody who had to go back to the hospital, spend 3 nights breastfeeding without food and sleep would be in pretty terrible shape at that point. The kind of terrible shape that's so erosive to the body that it erodes the mind.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really want to say how sorry I am that that was your experience and that your experience led to feeling pretty mentally, emotionally terrible. I'm very sorry to hear that for you.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm very much on the other side now and really, really grateful that, you know, I was able to, you know, get help and figure out ways to make myself feel better. I was mm-hmm. able to get the sleep that I needed, the mm-hmm. nutrition that I needed. And at the time I didn't feel like it was possible to come out on the other side. And so, you know, it's really important that, you know, women that are going through this now really understand that, you know, you will feel better and you will feel even better than you did before you had your child. And you'll be so grateful that you sort of stuck through it. But it's hard to believe that in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's challenging.
How were you aware of the depression? Like, did someone say something to you like, oh, you're not looking like yourself or acting like yourself? Or did you internally know? Like, how long did it take you to have that realization?
Yeah. So my mom was with me after I had my daughter and she was like, Sarah, you are really messed up. You need to get help. And I kept telling her I was fine. But I knew in the back of my mind, I was not okay. Ultimately, I went for my postpartum checkup. I think it was like 5 or 6 weeks after I had my daughter. And they give you a test, like just a written exam where they ask you a bunch of questions. And I like completely failed that test. I was on like my OBGYN was like, you are severely depressed. This isn't like a borderline case.
It's a social emotional assessment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Calling it a test sounds a little daunting, doesn't it?
I think everything is a test. And yes. I was like, wait, I didn't get straight A's on this. I didn't pass this. So there was, that was sort of a wake up call for me. And I made some changes. I stopped breastfeeding, which for me was just incredibly difficult and was really, just a huge cause of me staying in the house all day. And I think one of the big things that I did that really helped me was just getting out of the house. So both with my daughter and without my daughter, you know, even just walks to like the local park. You know, she was too little for the playground or anything like that, but I would just show her the trees. And it was just really helpful to have somewhere to go, something to do. It's part of the reason I started Winnie, was because it was so hard for me to get out of the house and feel comfortable going out of the house with my daughter. I wanted to make that easier for other parents.
Mm-hmm. I always, I always hope that these sorts of networkings that parents do take them to the baby and mom friendly eateries in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you need fresh air, sunshine, and food.
Yes.
So, yeah.
What did your support circle look like for you when you first had your baby?
It was mostly my husband, my mom. You know, a lot of my friends at the time didn't have children. Like, I mean, they still don't have kids, or some of them are actually starting to now. So I was sort of one of the first in my group of friends. Now I have more mom friends, but I've made them since becoming a mom. I didn't have them in the beginning. And it's funny, one of the like women I just sort of like latched onto, is this woman, Anne Halsall, who's now my co-founder at Winnie, because she had two kids and I worked with her at Postmates. And I sort of was asking her all these questions and all these things I needed to know that she was able to tell me. And, you know, part of our discussions were around like, it's so hard to get information about places from the lens of being a parent. You know, where is there a changing table, or where can I fit a stroller? But really so many questions. You really want to talk to other local parents who have been through it. Like, how do you find a nanny? That we realized there was just like a huge opportunity for technology to help solve these problems and bring people together who are parents and live near each other.
Mm-hmm. So you had friends and family, and then you created an app as part of your social support group.
Pretty much.
That's amazing. Did you have, for your birth, and you don't have to answer this because it's too personal, but like for your birth, did you have like a home birth, a hospital birth? Who attended your birth? Who was part of that support? What did that look like?
Yeah, my birth was actually one of my favorite things. Like, I'm looking forward. I don't know if I'll have another child, but if I do, like, that's the part I'm looking forward to most, just that hospital stay before the baby's born. So I was huge during my pregnancy, and they thought the baby was really huge, too. I gained over 70 pounds, and I'm a really small person. I'm 5'2". So they were pretty concerned when my daughter was like late, and wanted to induce me, and I was all for it because I had gotten so big, I could barely walk. So I got induced, which made the whole experience just really chill. Cause I, you know, got to pack all my bags and go to the hospital at my leisure. I took photos before. I actually had friends who like tried to visit me as I was sitting there being induced, and I kicked them out of the room. But, that's how like relaxed I was tweeting. And then I slept that night, woke up the next day, and they were like, oh yeah, you're gonna have the baby. I was like not gonna have an epidural because I kind of wanted to be, you know, do it all myself and see if I could do it all naturally. But then they like were like, if you don't have it now, you may never get the chance again. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm gonna do it. So I got an epidural, and I felt like no pain the whole process. I just popped the baby out. It was really easy. So I think I'll definitely do it that way again, because like everyone describes their birth as some like horrifying thing, and I don't even remember an ounce of pain. I was just sort of relaxed the whole time.
It's fascinating hearing the different experiences people have. It's so different for every person because every baby is so different.
Yeah.
And every person's body and their mental state and their expectations are also different.
And their environments.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And did you have any kind of like help, like in terms of doula or postpartum doula?
I had my mom and my dad, who my dad wasn't very helpful. I don't think he's ever like changed a baby's diaper in his life, despite his insistence that he was a very hands-on dad. But my mom was super helpful. And she was here, for a couple months after I gave birth. And then once I got like pretty deep in my exhaustion and depression, I hired a night nanny to stay with the baby at night, which, you know, I know most people can't afford that. For me, I think it's like one of the things that saved my life. It was pretty huge for allowing me to sleep. If I ever have another child, I will have that person from day one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't it fascinating that other cultures around the world have a lot of systems and traditions built up to protect new mothers in a way that just we in America really don't have? We don't have like a lot of the traditions about around food and making sure mothers are fed, or around rest and making sure mothers aren't the ones who are also doing the entertaining and the housework and the looking after the other kids. And it bewilders me the more and more I learn about this world and this topic that our system really sets moms up for failure.
Yeah.
That it's just like you have your baby in whatever setting you want, you know, home birth or hospital or whatever, but really it's all about the birth. And then after that, okay, bye. You know, mom's on her own at home. And I mean, it sounds like you had a really fantastic, group of people around you to help support you and do some of that practical stuff with you and give you some of the emotional care you needed. So I'm very happy.
Yeah. I mean, for someone like me who had all the, you know, resources at her disposal, like I had my own mother, I had money if I needed it that I could spend to hire help. Like I still was so completely lost and didn't have enough support that it's just, you know, that's what gets me into work every day working on Winnie, because I realize that there's just so much that parents need really in all phases of life, especially in the beginning. It's so hard to get the information and support that you need to be successful. That if I can prevent, you know, just one person from going through what I went through, I consider that a win.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's helping so many moms out there, just knowing that there's other people going through something similar. And for me, I guess I just what I want to pick on a little bit is this idea that, you know, it's almost like people don't know that they will need the support. They don't know how tough it's going to be emotionally, or how just like absolutely life altering it will be to suddenly have this little person, this new human being in your life, and what it takes logistically and emotionally and socially, and all of these things. It's like, you know, if you're lucky, your husband gets some time off work, right? But it almost seems like people
and there's somebody who don't have any idea,
right?
Like, how are they going to support you if they have no idea what that looks like?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't understand why there isn't, more education around what it might be like. I find that kind of fascinating. So all the classes I went to, so my baby's a year and a half, nearly. And I remember the classes I took were all about, at the hospital, for example, were all about like how to breastfeed, how to birth, how to, take care of a baby. But No one really sat me down and said, okay, you might want to think about X, Y, or Z, until Esther came over to my house as my postpartum doula to be and asked, what will it look like for you when you're, you know, thinking about making meals for yourself every day, or who's going to look after your house? I think you asked me a series of questions that were just very simple and practical, but nothing that I'd thought about or considered. And that was my first exposure to it. And I just feel like it was luck, you know, that I invited you into my home and had that conversation with you.
Well, I always have that conversation with anybody who is hiring, you know, looking to hire a birth doula, but hasn't thought about the fact that they'll be soon postpartum.
Uh-huh.
So I always have that conversation, and it is surprising that, you know, unless somebody walks into your home with that on the agenda, that you might never ever hear about what the challenges might be like and how to prepare for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what might need to be adjusted in order for you to get through without potential devastation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's not to say that if you had everything perfectly in place and were lucky enough to be well fed and nourished, that you would not experience postpartum depression. I just want to make that clear. I do think that the degree and the statistics to which women do suffer depression and the statistics around how many women suffer depression, I do feel like it's preventable to a large degree. And so that's why I do the work.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah, you were saying that you were one of the first of your friends to have kids.
Yes.
Yeah. So what did that look like in terms of your kind of friends being able to support you?
Yeah. I mean, it's, they weren't like, I mean, even now, like it's, I have to, you know, turn down a lot of events and things because I just can't run out of the house at a whim the way I used to be able to. Or, you know, I ask them if we can get together like after 8 p.m. when I put my daughter to bed, because then it's, I can leave my husband without feeling too bad that I'm putting all this stress on him. So I think it's just, it's really tough to relate to people without young children when you are in the thick of it. And, you know, some friends you kind of lose touch with because you're just at a very different life stage. But you also make new friends and meet people who are in a similar life stage. And I think that's true of probably every life transition, but most so of becoming a parent.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the observations you've made about, parents who are becoming parents now, sort of this generation of parents?
Yeah. So I think millennial parents, which is my generation, are sort of like the first that are really demanding technology to solve their problems because they're used to growing up with technology. So, you know, we have an app for everything. Like I can order a burrito and have it delivered in 5 minutes. And that's what was really sort of surprising and frustrating to me about the process of becoming a parent, was there were so many problems I had as a parent that were not solved by technology. And it was kind of crazy to think that like this, you know, Silicon Valley has taken every opportunity and even things that aren't opportunities and tried to seize them. But then when it came to this whole world of parenting, nothing was being worked on. And I think that's because of the profile of people who start technology companies. But I'm hopeful now that that's starting to change and people are seeing that there's a huge market in parents and especially millennial parents. And I think now will be the time when there will be a big technology brand, that takes on parenting. I'm hoping Winnie is part of that movement. But it's definitely, you know, something that I've noticed, that, you know, despite there being technology for everything else, there just doesn't seem to be technology solutions when it comes to parenting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious because I'm old. But also I would say I'm old and I've been doing this work for a very, very, very long time. And to me, a podcast is techie, you know, just sitting here at a microphone and using voice to relate to each other and talk about a subject we care about. And I'm curious how technology is going to create solutions for parents, because at root, I believe that we need appropriate support and from actual people who actually can wisely observe and nourish us during a major transition. And so I'm very curious what your ideas are about what the things are that technology needs to be solving for and how it could possibly do that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, some things are not going to be solved by technology. Like I need a physical human to care for my daughter. And that's like a human problem. Like I'm not going to have an app that watches my daughter while I'm at work. But when it comes to information and data, I think that's something that's really perfect for technology. So, you know, there's so much information that parents need that's offline. Like the story times at my local library are literally written on a piece of paper and posted on their bulletin board. And when they have special events, that's where they're posted too. And fortunately, my nanny goes there every day. So she writes down for me, you know, when they're having like baby yoga at the library, so that, you know, she can take my daughter or I can take my daughter. But like, you know, that's not a scalable solution. You have to either have a nanny that does that for you, or you have to do it yourself. And most parents don't have the resources to do that. So they don't know about the free baby yoga class at the library, or they don't know, you know, about all these great free resources available to them. They don't know about all the cool playgrounds they can go to, what preschool to send their child, all the home-based daycares, and which ones are licensed and unlicensed. You know, some of this has like really severe consequences because you send your child to a daycare that's not licensed that you found on Craigslist, and you know they end up doing horrible things or not treating your child right. And this information actually exists; it's just not in a place that's searchable, accessible, personalized, and easy to find. So that's one of the big things we're trying to do with Winnie is take all of this disparate information that, you know, may be somewhere. It may be on the bulletin board on a piece of paper or in a licensing database about a daycare that it got 50 complaints. And we want to make that information really accessible to parents so they can quickly search for that daycare and find out if it's licensed, what other parents think about it, what are the great playgrounds to go to, you know, all that kind of stuff about local places. That if they just had that information at their fingertips, they'd have more time to spend with their children, more time to spend at their job. And they wouldn't have to just spend all this time. Like just to find my daughter a nanny was literally a year long search effort for me, that like, you know, it doesn't have to be that hard.
Hi listeners. I have some exciting news to share with you today. We've partnered with Every Mother, your go-to destination for evidence-based exercise therapy regimens. Whether you're dealing with diastasis recti, preparing for birth, or navigating postpartum recovery, Every Mother has your back. With personalized daily routines tailored to your core and pelvic floor needs, they're here to support you every step of the way. Say hello to a stronger, healthier you with Every Mother. Visit their website today and use code 4thTrimester10 for 10% off your personalized regimen. That's fourth spelled out, F-O-U-R-T-H, trimester10 for 10% off, because every mother deserves the very best.
I'm wondering if the modern world that we live in today, which necessitates kind of the aggregation of all of this, just like fragmented data that lives on pieces of paper and library walls, what I'm trying to just compare kind of this modern experience that we have as parents, especially as parents living in a big city, to what life might have been like in a village. I was thinking about this the other day because I went to visit my my mom and her mom, so it was like four generations of like great grandma, grandma, mom, and great-grandbaby, and it was really sweet as an experience. And I just thought, I would like to have that in my life every day. And if we lived in the same place, I could have that. And my nanny solution would be partially taken care of because my mom would be around to kind of help here and there. And other women her age who I'm related to could help. And you know, my circle, my network, and my life would be much simpler and smaller. And to anyone who has that village experience life and they're happy with it, amazing. But I know certainly for me, that hasn't been my experience. And I mean, what you're speaking to, Sarah, is kind of this city existence where we don't have that village. So it's almost like this tool or the technology solution is sort of filling in the gap for that village, you know, for all the things that maybe would have happened more naturally in a different kind of setup.
Yeah, but like, frankly, it's also filling in the gap for the fact that women, for the most part, used to stay home and take care of children, and that was it. And that's changing. Like, there are way more households where both parents work, or, you know, parents work part-time or have other things going on in their lives. And, you know, they frankly don't have as much time to just sit there and figure all this stuff out. Like, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she did all this same stuff. Like, she had to figure a lot of stuff out herself too. But that was her job. Parenting is a job. And for me, like, it's my job too, but I also have other stuff going on. And I think that's the case for women more and more. And we're taking this like hidden labor of women that has existed forever since the beginning of time. And we're trying to kind of say, like, this is real work. Like, just because it hasn't been recognized as real work doesn't mean women weren't doing it and finding out this information. They were doing it. They still are doing it, but now they also have to do all these other things. So let's make it easier. Let's also bring men into the fold. Let's like take this stuff that, you know, can only be found in these like mothers groups that are very exclusive and make this information available to men too, so they can help with some of this research and figuring out what to do and places to go.
Mm-hmm. Right. There are stay-at-home dads in some cases, or yeah, two parents who are working. Absolutely. And who suffers, do you think, when that you have two parents who are working and someone doesn't have time to be that stay-at-home parent and figure this out?
I mean, my husband may disagree, but I think the women take on the burden, you know, in 90% of the cases. A lot of men think they're taking on the burden, but really it's in a lot of cases falling on the woman, you know, even when they have a high powered career and they're working, you know, we hear from women like over and over again that they still have this burden to figure out what to do with their kids, to get them into preschool, that sort of all this sort of like mental overhead that seems to still fall to the woman. Mm-hmm. And that's like a huge generalization. There are tons of hands-on dads now. We actually see a lot of dads using Winnie. And we surveyed them and they said, you know, this is the first time they felt like there was a product for them that wasn't branded like mommy this or mom that. And so they're super excited. And I think, like, you know, that's going to be more and more the case. These millennial dads are really stepping up to the plate and like, let's make it possible for them to do so.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting that women are doing the work of making it possible? Sorry. I mean, I hate to sound bitter or critical. However, I don't think it is women's jobs to have to make sure that parenting goes well for men. I think it's men's job to be parents. So I will just say that out loud as a single mother. And also just say that it is well documented that women are carrying in, you know, the vast majority of family systems, family situations, women are carrying the entire burden of parenting, whether or not they work outside the home. It's just a thing. This is America.
My husband had cancer. Actually, it was around last year this time that he was diagnosed. And so, you know, he was extremely sick and in treatment for 6 months. And so I got sort of a taste of what it was like as a single mother. And it's really, really hard. And there are so many single parents out there. And so like any sort of savings you can get them, they will take in terms of saving, you know, parents are time poor. So the information, the more information you can bring to them at their fingertips, and save them time, the better.
Sorry to hear about your husband, and I hope recovery is going.
Yeah, he's doing well now. He's in remission and healthy. But it was pretty rough to have a young child and a really sick spouse, because I had to be the parent of both of them. It was, you know, I was in survival mode, not to mention I was also running Winnie.
Absolutely. That sounds so tough. And did you ever have any moments where you felt like maybe some of that anxiety or depression feelings were coming back?
No, you know, it actually was, I felt mentally like really, like when I was in like a sort of a fight or flight response. And so it was sort of the opposite of how I felt when I was in my like depression phase. I felt completely like I needed to fix this. I was in charge of everything. Like I had to be extremely strong. It was amazing for losing those 70 pounds I gained that I didn't lose after my pregnancy. I immediately lost them when my husband was diagnosed with cancer because I stopped eating. I was just like so busy in survival mode. And actually, it wasn't until recently that I've sort of been able to catch my breath. But no, it was sort of like the opposite of depression. It was like this hyper state of, you know, needing to be this super parent and super wife.
Well, sounds like you're very compelled.
Yeah.
By this situation. Boy.
But all is well now. And after having been through all of that, it's all great. And, you know, it really makes you enjoy the moments a lot more now. And I just can't imagine, I actually can't imagine going through my husband's cancer without my daughter. Because she was really like the grounding force and kept us both strong and fighting the whole time. And so, you know, she's amazing and so happy to have her in my life. And it's just like the feelings I have now towards being a mom are like completely different from when I first had her. So it's amazing how that's changed.
I think that's something that those of us who have been through depressions as mothers, or I'm sure fathers will say again and again, which is that, you know, just the experience of having the privilege to be a parent is such a gift that it's worth struggling through all that. If you have to.
Mm-hmm. I think anyone who is listening is interested in hearing more about sort of anxiety issues or depression issues postpartum, whether you just had your baby or it's been 6 months and you're just kind of not feeling totally yourself. I would highly recommend checking out our website and looking at the article that we wrote for Jane Honickman and listening to the Jane Honickman episode, because she's a woman who's really been through it. She gave her first baby up for adoption, and it was really just because she felt the pressure to kind of do things in order. What was it, the 70s or the 60s at that time? And she just felt, I mean, people feel that pressure now too, I think, to a degree, of course, but I think that she really felt it, and then married that same man and had subsequent babies and just felt so much guilt and grief over the way things had gone down, and didn't get help until much, much later. But she gave a great outline of kind of like the steps to wellness, and recommends kind of helping sort of check oneself. You can ask yourself a simple list of kind of checklist type questions, like, am I getting enough sleep? Am I eating enough? Do I have time for myself? I mean, as you were highlighting, Sarah, have I gone outside? Have I left my house?
Yeah.
In a while.
Brushed my hair.
Yeah. And then the list kind of goes down in order. It's like, do I have someone who I can share things with and not be judged by that person for what I'm sharing? Do I have emotional support? Do I have practical support? And just things like that. I mean, really the whole list, you could summarize it as being different degrees or different types of self-care, things that maybe someone is overlooking if they're not quite feeling very good, right?
Yeah. And her the website that she started is Postpartum International, postpartum.net, I think, right?
Yeah.
And it's a worldwide resource online for new parents.
Yeah. So, yeah, Sarah, I don't know what that technology solution looks like, the bigger thing that you were alluding to earlier, but there's a lot of information online as well, but it's not easy to find unless you look for it.
Yep.
Which I think I would,
those
I would,
words.
I would add, yeah. So I would add that to the technology solution for parents puzzle, mm-hmm. Because it almost needs to be like part of the program, mm-hmm. right? Like when you go to the hospital and you're like signing up for your classes, cause you're a new mom and you're so excited. You're like, I'm going to sign up for every class, which is what I did. It just needs to be there. It needs to be part of the program. Like here are the resources for you. Here are the apps that will be helpful. Here are the websites that will be helpful. Or like maybe it's just one thing where it's, I don't know, something else.
Yeah. So tell us, you've done all this wonderful work to create this specific app. Tell us if I were a pregnant mom, and I heard of your app and I downloaded it. Tell us, how would I use it?
Yeah. So Winnie is like a local network for parents. So, you know, when you open Winnie, there's a feed of other parents who live near you. You can see what they're posting, which, we've had some expecting mothers join, and like just seeing, we've talked to them and just seeing the feed of questions that parents are asking sort of has opened their eyes to like the kinds of things that are probably waiting for them down the road. Mm-hmm. Which I know for me would have been super useful before I had my daughter. So you can use our directory, which is sort of a Yelp-like directory of places where you can look up all the metadata on them and the other reviews from parents. Stuff like, can you fit a stroller into this restaurant? Can you keep it at your table, or are they going to make you fold it up? but you can also use our feed to just post general questions or thoughts or connect with other parents that live near you. So we, you know, see parents posting like just funny, stupid pictures, but also some asking, you know, more serious questions like, I need this resource. Where can I get it? Or can you recommend X? And so I think, you know, our goal is like every parent, every new parent can download Winnie, can get a glimpse into the kinds of things they'll need to know. And they can also ask questions. And for folks like me who didn't have a lot of people to go to in the beginning, it would have been really helpful. And they can also sort of just search for information that they, when they need specific stuff about places or local resources, we want to be the place where they find that.
Excellent. And is it reflexive in some ways? Like are parents feeding in the data themselves?
Yeah.
In a sense, like.
Yeah. So the crowdsource component is a huge part of Winnie. Winnie wouldn't really work without the parents giving us this information about places. So parents write reviews of places they go with their kids. I'm opening Winnie right now. Someone wrote a review at the top of Recess, which is like an urban, indoor play gym in San Francisco. And parents also kind of capture the metadata about places, like, is there a changing table in the bathroom, which like you can't really find anywhere else besides Winnie. So we have to either get all that data ourselves or rely on parents who've been there that tell us the data.
Excellent. And you live in San Francisco, so you know San Francisco stuff. Would this work in a little, say, a less urban setting?
Yeah, so Winnie is available all over, and we've gathered data. We've sort of done broad sweeps of data to pull in stuff that we can scrape off the internet, like, you know, local parks. We've sure. scraped a lot of that off the internet for all locations across the United States. But Winnie gets better as more people in a community are using it. So we have our biggest community in the San Francisco Bay Area. So Winnie has the richest data there. But we also see communities sort of all over. We have people in small towns that use Winnie. We have, you know, lots of users in other big cities like New York. Mm-hmm. But like the more people we have in a small area that use it, the sort of richer the community is and the better the data is.
Yeah.
Well, great. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with our audience?
This was great. Thanks for having me and letting me tell my story. And if you want to get Winnie, you can download it from our website, winnie.com.
Perfect. I totally agree. I think everyone could give a shot at trying the app. And, you know, I've also found that I wish when I could just plug this a little bit more. When I was pregnant, I wish I'd kind of done the research and kind of joined the moms, the parents, apps and forums, things that are local before I had the baby, because I went out and bought a bunch of stuff. And it's like, you can get all this stuff in secondhand classifieds for like pennies. Not only that, but you can start, as you said, hearing the questions, starting to make the connections, starting to think about what your life looks like with new baby ahead of time, right? Like use this app or, you know, whatever resource it happens to be to kind of find your local park, find your local activities. And yeah, I couldn't recommend it more. So anyway, Sarah, thank you so much for being on our show. You've been a fantastic guest, and we're just so happy for you and your family.
Thank you.
Yeah. Blessings on you. Boy, you've been through the ringer and come out. That's always impressive. And look at this amazing thing that you've brought to the world as a result. So wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Great. Thank you so much. All right, listeners, just another reminder, you can go to fourthtrimesterpodcast.com and get our newsletter or sponsor our show. And we will see you next time. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
You can find out more about Esther Gallagher on esthergallagher.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast in order to hear more from us. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you'll join us next time on the Fourth Trimester. The theme music on this podcast was created by Sean Trott. Hear more at soundcloud.com/Sean Trott. Special thanks to my true loves, my husband Ben, daughter Penelope, and baby girl Evelyn. Don't forget to share the Fourth Trimester podcast with any new and expecting parents. I'm Sarah Trott. Goodbye for now.
Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I'll sing a song for you. You got your wheels, you got your gears. You ride around town without any fear. You got your pedals, you got your brakes. You always wear your helmet for safety's sake. Bicycle Man, I know you're doing the best that you can.
I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you.